No, sure we will.
Call the meeting to order.
I just get tired of seniority.
Bingo.
First, can I have a motion to approve the minutes of the reorganizational meeting for January 14th, 2013?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any changes? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We have a motion to approve the minutes of the regular meeting from January 14th, 2013.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any questions, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Both approved? Any public comments? Don't have any specific chairman's comments, so we'll move on to the presentations. So, Pam?
Can you start with reading first?
Definitely.
You look like you're done with your lunch.
I'm done.
Would that be your problem?
What?
Switching around?
Oh, not a problem. Give me a moment.
A little problem.
Apparently Carlton has volunteered to go first.
All right.
Thank you. Last year, we set some goals for the laboratory, 10 goals. Some pretty lofty, like the accreditation of the lab, the master lab on the ISO 17025. And we successfully accomplished that last year. That all the items in red are goals that were successfully accomplished. The second goal we have up there is expanding lab testing. We're still looking at what and how we can expand lab testing in the law enforcement agency and in other areas like environmental testing as well. We also set a goal of acquiring 2 pieces of equipment for updating our blood alcohol analysis. We would accomplish at least that was partially accomplished. We got the blood alcohol equipment in on the federal grant. And we are now in the process of bidding for the second piece of equipment. Hopefully, sometime this year, we should have that installed. The importance of that second piece of equipment is right now we have a single main piece of equipment, GCMS. If that equipment is down, we have a set of testing setups. We need a second as a backup. That's why we need that second piece of equipment. We're looking at trying to the third or the fourth goal was. Again, we're trying to save some money. We spent a lot of money buying cylinders of nitrogen from these compressed gases, local company. And so we were able to get federal grant for buying the nitrogen and hydrogen generators so we can produce these gases in house. Hopefully that will save some money because we don't have to buy these things to generate them. So that was accomplished. We got those equipment in house too. Just prior to coming here in 2010, returning to Kenosha, we were outsourcing most of our analytical work because, again, the lab was in a pretty bad shape in terms of equipment-wise. Currently, we outsource nothing, everything is done in-house, and that was a major goal which we have accomplished. This is the next slide. Digitizing laboratory records, you were again saving everything on paper and you're running out of space. So what you want to do is to convert the documents to PDFs and store it digitally. And you will get that done again in the course of last year. Yeah, looking at new technology for testing water as well as viral screening, like the way of PCR. And that is something we're still looking at. Dr. Schumer is involved in that to us, so still evaluating how feasible it is compared to the land. As part of the Division of Health, we are also preparing for the national accreditation. program that is ongoing. So that is still out there. We had three major inspections last year. That was, we had the ASCLAD lab accreditation. We had a nitrate inspection under the DNR. That's every 2 years we got the audited. So that was also successfully done last year, as well as the CLIA inspection. That's for the microbiology. Part of the laboratory work, that was also successfully done last year. So we had 10 goals. Well, last year we accomplished 7. So we've got a 70% accomplishment, and we have 3 that we are still looking at for the coming year. Just a summary of some of the activities of the lab. During the course of the last year, we were to we analyze in the chemistry section of the lab, that is the forensic aspect of the lab work, blood drugs, blood alcohol, controlled substances. Over 5,000 samples were submitted to the lab. 5,567 samples were submitted. And of those 5,000 plus samples, we were able to confirm 2,800 positive. So whether it's urine, drugs, or controlled substances, a little bit, about 60% were positive in terms of ID and whatever the drug or substance is. The environmental aspect of the lab, where we have like paint chips, water analysis, like for nitrate, bacteria, we received 3,571 samples. And of those, we had a positive confirmation of 397, which is good in terms of whether it's bacteria in water or high nitrate levels. We had a 10%, a little more than 10% positive confirmation. The microbiology side of the lab, this would be like things coming from the clinical section of the Division of Health, gonorrhea, culturing, food culturing. We had just about 1,000 samples submitted, and we had a 26 samples confirmed. That was about less than 5%. And that's a summary of the activities of the lab for last year. There have been some changes for this new year. A significant portion of the toxicology work of the lab in terms of urine has been removed from the lab, again because of DCFS trying to find cheaper ways of doing things. We have to remove and reevaluate the role of the lab. That's about all I have for you today.
Any questions for Charlton? Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Pamela Smith, and I am project administrator for the Life Course Initiative for Health and Families. I think the last time I presented here was back when we first started in 2010, and we've had some accomplishments as well since then. So just by way of background, for I don't know if all of you were around when I showed up, but we are funded by the Wisconsin Partnership Program of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and there's two sections of funding. The first phase was a planning grant from 2010 to 2012 for $250,000, and then renewed in April 1 of 2012 for 2 more years, $150,000 the first year and $100,000 the second year. Our key partners, of course, all of this emerged out of the Black Health Coalition that brings Kenosha, and then, of course, the Division of Health, the Community Health Center, Community Action Agency, and the United Way Infant Mortality Delegation. So during our planning phase, we also had some goals. Some were prescribed, so we didn't quite have the liberty of setting some for ourselves, we did, but the funding was to, one, create a multi-sector collaborative, and some of those sectors were defined for us, and we're doing quite well in that area in terms of having the 8 mandatory sectors represented on the collaborative, as well as many other community organizations and partners. We were to convene 2 summits, and we did that, one at the Public Museum and one at Brass Elementary School. And the final deliverable outcome was to be our community action plan. And so the process that was used to go about that, some of this was also required by our funders, Wisconsin Partnership Program. And some of you may know that this project is funded in 4 communities, in Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, and Beloit. And each of us were required to do a community needs assessment, as well as to visit evidence-based programs that had proven successful in reducing infant mortality, as well as improving birth outcomes. So during those first couple of years, we went to visit the Center in Pregnancy Symposium down in Chicago, went over to Michigan to look at a CDC-sponsored program, REACH, which is an acronym that I won't even try to recall at the moment. But there was an undoing racism seminar that many of the communities were looking at to look at some social factors, which I'll talk about in a couple of slides later, as well as the Magnolia Project and the Northern New Jersey Consortium. Those are nationally recognized programs that have proven very successful in just convening multiple sectors of communities to help with some systems change and funding to improve birth outcomes and reduce infant mortality. We convened discussion groups at several community locations and faith-based organizations, held some meetings with some of our local state projects that were looking at some initiatives that could be compatible. We had presentation to collaborative members where organizations came in and did presentations. The Medicaid Navigator, for instance, came in, as well as some Kenosha Unified School District student-led initiatives. And then we had a public hearing that involved all 4 communities that was convened by some legislators to look at some policy-related changes that could support the work that we're doing in the 4 communities. And then community discussions. So all of these were activities that were done in basically the first year and a half. And it led to asking why the gap. I thought I'd give you a little bit of photo and keep us all awake here instead of just the text. The planning phase. So in summary, what we found that when we did the community needs assessment, talked to the various discussion groups and went around throughout the community, that there are gaps in local and existing programs and services. There were low ratings. We had a rating scale that was prescribed that we used and asked people to rate the availability of services and satisfaction. That was found low in some areas, particularly for prenatal care, fatherhood involvement, and anti-racism services. Father issues of jobs, child support, visitations continue to be barriers to engaging fathers back with children and families. And then to identify community assets, gaps, and needs, those showed that we needed additional strategies to increase access to prenatal care. Some of that has happened, and we made progress in many of these areas, but Gwen can help out here as we get further along. But the Medicaid Navigator was critical into this community to improve access to prenatal care. Some of that was a little bit before my time, so Gwen and Cindy could probably add on to that. We need to identify fatherhood involvement barriers and interventions. There are statewide efforts for that across the board for getting fathers and men, whether they be uncles and brothers and cousins, involved with kids. And again to look at the structural and institutional racism and its impact on health. There are social determinants of health, there are health disparities that have been documented, and that is part of the work we're doing, is to try to look at those factors and see how they impact health and birth outcomes and infant mortality in Kenosha. We've seen Milwaukee and Brooklyn. So I thought I'd just throw in some of these results. We did several presentations, and I probably have a couple of dozen PowerPoints, so I just thought a little color might help. So we did ask a couple of the discussion groups and focus groups, what can be done to reduce infant mortality? And these are some of the responses we got. I have to put my glasses on for those. Support systems and education on SIDS, on proper sleep. Many of you may have read the co-sleeping cases that happened here in Kenosha as well as in Milwaukee, and particularly in Milwaukee, the numbers were high. But these were some medical checkup and help with the medical requirements. And then we asked what can improve services for women, children, and families. And again, medical checkups and the medical factors rank high. More medical help before the first pregnancy. One of the things we have learned is that the health of a woman starts long before she becomes pregnant. And so some of these observations were confirmed for us as well. I won't read them all. Chance to do that, but you can see that the father involvement ranked at 62% and 73% to help children do better. And lastly, what can be done to strengthen families? And high among those was communication, which was 5%. No, I thought there was a 9 in there. 59% would have been real high. But employment and financial assistance, support system programs for the whole family was real interesting to see. And then we asked a men's group. We did a focus group, discussion group just with men and dads. And we asked them, what keeps fathers from being involved with their children? And 57% said child support laws and the courts. 43% indicated that they needed help facilitating visits. And so you'll see later on that one of the proposals that came out of all of this work is a proposal that's now being considered to start a fatherhood involvement discussion group and program here in Kenosha. So those were just some of the questions and some of the results that we had during the planning process. And then after 2 years of planning, we moved into the implementation phase. The funding was ran out for that first phase, and then we were refunded for implementation. And that those priorities was to take a look at a policy issue that was impacting women and families as far as accessing health care and staying current and on their health needs. And we chose transportation. And then to look at our governance structure of our collaborative, and then the community action plan. And so those three are our policy priorities for 2012-2014, is to assess the efficiency of the state contracted transportation services. That's recently gone through some changes, and I can talk a little bit more about that. And then convene listening sessions with women, expectant moms, and local stakeholders, some of the providers, to try to troubleshoot and see where some of the issues are, and then to design and implement advocacy strategies to help improve transit services for the consumers. We've had one listening session at the Women, Infant, and Children's, the WIC office, and there is a complaint process. We've had the state Medicaid navigator to come to some of our collaborative meetings to talk about state policy and what the state is doing with the the contract for transportation. But oftentimes, appointments are missed, you know, there's issues of childcare and required car seats and all kind of issues that have emerged out of that discussion. And so our collaborative is taking the lead and trying to help facilitate some improvements in that area. This was just a governance structure. We were required to put together bylaws and try to more formally organize our collaborative. And so we do have an executive team. We have core advisors, including the Health Department, Kenosha Community Health Center, the WIC office, the Mahone Foundation, and I am forgetting somebody. There are five. Winston, Rick, Winston, Pam, Tim, and Jack. Yeah. So that's been very helpful. And then the executive team, you'll see the three colors, the three domains are three categories that our collaborative have organized under. That's based around the life course approach to health and 12-point plan. So domain one is the access to healthcare domain. Domain two is strengthening families and communities. And domain three is social determinants, taking a look at the social factors and disparities that impact health. And at the bottom are all the, not all, certainly not all inclusive, but those are major factors that have been found to impact health and access to health. So by way of recap, the life course approach and this project, the life initiative that's funded by the university was organized around Dr. Liu's work of this 12-point plan. And his primary thesis is that, you know, there are biological, behavioral, psychological, and social protective and risk factors that impact a person's health over the course, over the span of their lives, that it's not just the health of a woman when she's pregnant. And that's then broken up into the three domains that I just reviewed from the chart before. And after the work that we did, we selected and asked our group broke up in these categories as well, and asked for each group to prioritize, come up with the priorities of needs. And the first was prenatal care, the second is fatherhood, and the third was undoing racism and closing the education gap. And we were asked by the Wisconsin Partnership Program to identify then evidence-based programs, promising practices that our community here in Kenosha could then propose for funding to include in the service system here to try to improve birth outcomes. And so our recommendations and our community action plan is available online. It's available at the Wisconsin Partnership site. It's also available on our website here with the division. But the community action plan is about a 30-page document. It summarizes all the data in more detail. It summarizes the planning process and all the activities that were accomplished over the first 2 years. And what came out of that were four proposals that are being considered that we are to be notified by February 28th, I'm told, whether or not they will be funded. And they are the Division of Children and Family Services put in a proposal for Healthy Families in Kenosha, $400,000 over 3 years. The Community Health Center put in a proposal for the Centering Pregnancy, which is a group prenatal care model. $150,000 over 2 years. And then the other $50,000 grants are study grants. And so the Community Action Agency put in for a one-year grant to take a look at fatherhood involvement, and the Division of Health put in a one-year grant to look at bringing in some discussions and discoveries around dismantling racism and its impact on health and health disparities. So as I said, we should know by February 28th which of those will be funded, and we look forward to continuing our work over the next couple of years. And so our priorities going forth are starting to look at sustainability beyond 2014. which is the extent of the funding that we currently have, expires in 2014, and so we have begun having some discussions about fundraising and grant development and other ways to raise funds to sustain this work here in the community. And with that, I appreciate your attention and would entertain any questions if you have any. Yes, ma'am?
I just was wondering, as far as the Fatherhood Initiative, have you worked with other communities on that? I know that Milwaukee's Injury Coalition Prevention Committee and epidemiologist out of Marquette has done some extensive work on that in that area, and I'm just wondering if you partnered with anyone else.
Actually, there's a National Fatherhood Initiative that is very strong in Milwaukee, but the Community Action Agency actually put up a grant. That entire staff is going up on this Friday, the 15th, to a big meeting in Milwaukee around that. So I believe some of those same people are involved. Appreciate
and
it.
As far as the centering pregnancy, are you, I know that that's a specific model that has a very good research base to it.
Yes.
How is it that, like, I see it's like, you know, a two-year kind of thing. How is it that you plan to, like, initiate that here? Is that like a... hire new staff to do that kind of thing, or is it a program that you bring in from somewhere else? How does that work?
It's the community health center.
Community health center.
Yeah,
it's okay.
These are just.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say these are grants that were written by organizations within the community, but the community health center has taken the lead on that.
Yeah, okay.
As that whole. Their primary home, medical home project, they're centering it around that. Working with the hospital in which delivers. So it's much larger than just this one piece.
So that's based on them getting a contract for the medical home stuff as well, that's like in process right now?
Well, they have a contract with HMO, but they're going to use this national model in order to incorporate the group component for centering pregnancy to it. I know they have some physical structure issues because the centering pregnancy does require the physical space to match their design. So they're looking at all those components now, but planning to implement this.
And I was just going to add that they did a pilot test. They do have some modified groups, but as that was happening, because of all of these fidelity restrictions, some of the communities start modifying that model, and then the folks from centering had a meeting in Milwaukee and basically said, if you don't adhere to the model, then you can't call it centering. And so the community health center was not prepared initially to just roll it out in full scale. And so they have tried and started a group prenatal care group of women over there that they hope to move into the centering model if and when it's funded. The interesting thing too, I should just say about that, is that all three of the four communities put in for the centering pregnancy program.
Well, I understand it has a lot of research base.
A lot of research. March of Dime is supporting it very strongly. And so we're not sure and won't know how that funding will be shared across the communities.
Don't we have, we have a lot of prenatal programs in place just because they can't get there? I mean, we've got other talks here, I know, when you talk about prenatal things that are available. Some up here, right here in this building and everything. Is it just because of the transportation?
The centering pregnancy model is a medical-based model.
Okay.
What we're doing here at the health department is
a visitation model
with more education.
Right.
Different types.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. The transportation issue that I mentioned was not necessarily tied to these models. They were more issues of doctor's appointments and other requirements that some of the families have encountered difficulties with.
In general, transportation can be a big problem.
Yeah. And that's why we're looking at that bigger picture of why women might delay services. And there's a multi-cosmic of all of these things that are happening. We're just in our early phase of communication with the community health center, even though they'll have this group pregnancy model during the appointments, they still are looking for help in regards to home visitation and having some type of professional nurse-client relationship to get them to the appointments, get them to this group. So what we're trying to do is fill those gaps to make sure that the client not only receives quality care, but prompt care too.
Sure.
And do we know?
The other sell to that model, just as a final comment, is that the women then create their own support group, because there are groups of women who are, their delivery date is around the same time. And with Mom Baby Talk, we had another model of a program here, and the women started connecting, offering each other rides and calling each other and supporting each other kind of in that way as well. So the support system is also a very important part of that model, that the women support each other.
You know, I don't know if this has been considered at all, but there is a nurse midwife program for advanced practice nursing at Marquette, and I know that there's a lot of interest among those students as far as that model. And if you're looking for some partnering and maybe staff help through clinical sorts of things, it might be a way that, I know one of the students has actually already implemented the program, a centering program, so they have some experience in it, and it might be a good partnership to think about.
We're in touch with them. We've gone to meetings. There's meetings of the midwifery group and the life group, and for some reason I don't think that is here in Kenosha, though, right? We don't have to have midwives here.
And that has a lot to do more with
credential hospital system. But you make very good points. That is important too. The collaboration is happening in cities like Milwaukee, where they do have it. And there were a couple of wonderful presentations about the success of midwifery services there.
I think what we found also is that one size doesn't fit all, to the question of, don't we have a program here? And so through a lot of these focus groups, what we've identified is that we have several different avenues or venues for moms to be able to access the information and the resources. Whether they would prefer a group setting, for some that's not what they want. They prefer a one-to-one type of connection. And so we have a multitude of, a variety in order to engage them for their type of what would engage them, in order for them to access the education and have the optimal outcome for their baby. And I guess that's what we've really learned, that one size doesn't fit all. And even through our prenatal care coordination program, we would engage the mom on the telephone to ask her if she'd want to be in the program. And we basically were offering that discussion in the same way to everyone. What we discovered was we really need to see if this is their first child or they have other children, because how we engage them in the conversation made a huge difference of whether they would enter the program. Mm-hmm. First-time moms, they're interested in learning about growth and development. This is all new for them. Moms that have had children, in order to re-engage them, the usual response was, I did that already, I don't need that anymore. But what we discovered is if we offer them, there may be new services or resources available to you now based on your circumstance at this point in time may be very different from that first time around. So they're more apt to engage with us, and then we can identify their needs and include them in the program. So,
sure.
It's been a learning process.
Oh, just a little bit on the transportation issue. I know I read that LogistiCare,
yes,
was contracted by the state to run the transportation program, is terminating their contract this month, I believe, February. But they have to stay on until somebody's replaced them. Do we,
that's correct.
Any update there? What's
Any sense? Medicaid navigator did come to our meeting from the state office in December, and basically even though the contract expires until the state has secured other transportation providers, the district care has to stay on. And so they, but I think part of the problem was, or at least we're told, that once they got in, the expense, you know, they underestimated the expense, and I think they had that problem in Milwaukee with the taxi cabs and, you know, just overcharging. So, I mean, it's a real issue for the transportation position under Medicaid, and I don't know what the solution would be.
So the fuel prices go up and down and all kinds of costs are hard to estimate.
Well, I was watching or reading all those articles that came out, because when I used to work for Wheaton Franciscan and I was at all the different buildings, that services, you know, Cape Town Transport, Southport, and several others are, you know, they're really there all the time. People really depend on getting to those doctor's appointments and clinics and whatnot. And they're heavily used.
I think Cape Town has expanded, because I see them in Racine all the time.
Yeah, both of them are up in Racine all the time. But they, LogistiCare was blaming the state for not providing them current updated statistics on how much they would be used. And they were claiming they weren't making enough money, and it was because the state didn't provide them proper information to begin with when they signed the contract. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it's just important that we don't lose that transportation.
We chose it as a policy issue because it had surfaced, and we had one meeting where we actually had the moms there and just had a lot of feedback. And at our last project coordinators meeting between the four communities, Racine also is having the problem, so a couple of us are looking at the possibility of getting together to see if there's some way to do something along the economy of scales to come up with solutions that might work.
I was kind of used to run our own transportation before LogistiCare, but
That applies to a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
Releasing some services,
things change.
It's just the way of the economy. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
City Health Officer.
Yes, there are a few updates since we met last month. One, to let you know that regarding our public health accreditation, which Carlton had mentioned, I told you last month we submitted the documents. We've been contacted by the accreditation board. We have to make some adjustments on some of the documents, and then we're in the queue, so to speak, to schedule the site visit. So I was surprised that their contact was so quick. And that's exciting, so I look forward to letting you know when the site visit will occur. And of course, your presence will be very important to share feedback with the accreditation board. Our environmental health department, they're still working on the health space data system, testing that out, but they also are operating at half staff until they get all of the key people in place. Carlton had mentioned that the lab had undergone a shift since our last Board of Health meeting, and the drug urine testing contract was shifted from the lab to the nursing section, which resulted in a reduction in force in the lab. The lab lost one FTE, that was the lab tech position, and that individual transferred to one of our open public health tech positions. And as Carlton mentioned, the reason by the contract, they were seeking a vendor who could meet the time element that they wanted, which was immediate results, less than 24 hours actually, and also cost was a factor. And so by shifting it to a public health tech, that was a lower level cost position, which reduced drastically the cost of the contract. They also did not require confirmations for their testing, and they only needed screenings for the results, and so that we could offer on a same day method. And with the lab being ASCLAD for forensic lab. Screenings are just a screen, as those of you know, and so it would not be a functional program under the lab with lack of confirmations to those tests. And that would also mean the oversight by Carlton, and if it were to be any court cases, or that he would have to go and testify, that he wouldn't meet those qualifications. HUD is still working on closing out the last grant that ended at the end of December. They have until the end of March. Our nursing section, I'm happy to tell you that our QI project that we worked with the state, we've been asked or selected, we did put a proposal and we've been selected to present at the state WPHA, Wisconsin Public Health Association conference in May. And the presentation title will be Improved Birth Outcomes Through Partnership, the Kenosha County Division of Health and Wisconsin Division of Public Health Using QI Processes for Change. So both Gwen and myself will be going and presenting at the state conference. With communicable diseases, our influenza reports are winding down. Our new satellite clinic at WIC is going well, starting to see people, and we'll be in the process of training WIC staff so that we can collaborate to a maximum ability in order to engage the clients and fluidly transfer them back and forth from WIC and the Division of Health. Our community health team, they're closing out the 2012, or have closed out the 2012 consolidated contracts through the state. That would be our MCH, prevention, immunization, well women program, and we've met all of the objectives 100% and beyond. Just to share with you, our immunization rate is at 64%. That's what we strive for. We met that goal, but 64%. Not all that wonderful. It's not near the 90% of the state national, but that's where we're at, and so are a lot of other counties. Grant, we did receive a new grant. It's called the Strategic Prevention Framework Partnership for Success 2 grant, and it's through SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. It's Center for Substance Abuse and Prevention, and it's implementing preventive strategies to reduce the non-medical, unauthorized use of use and abuse of prescription drugs, which is a major contributor for unintentional death in our community. It's one of the key, that's the key number of deaths, unintentional deaths due to prescription drug use. We'll be focusing on ages 12 to 25. We are waiting, we're one of nine counties that have been identified as an area of high need and selected on the basis of risk factors. We'll be receiving $112,889 per year for 3 years, and $20,240 of that will be allocated to the UW Population Health Institute, who will be doing the grant evaluation. We submitted that we are accepting the dollars which have been offered to us, so we're one step ahead of going to the Human Services Committee, which that'll come before as a resolution, and then of course finance and the full county board for approval. But just to let you know that our county was selected to receive that money. Fiscally, our 2012 revenue summary, which is still not totally closed out, we're at 111% above our budget, and that's 7.4% above the 2011 revenue. In staffing, the open positions, we have two nursing public health techs, one of which the lab position, the lab person transferred to. We'll have an environmental public health tech person. We have one sanitarian, another sanitarian position was just transferred by the environmental public health tech, and we have an advanced nurse practitioner. And we'll be doing interviews very soon. The A&P advanced nurse practitioner posting will close February 15th.
Any questions?
Thank you.
No corporation counsel report, I'm assuming. Any other business as allowed by law?
Yeah, I've got little something to discuss. Last month, Mark suggested that we develop a resolution to increase the Medicaid funding for children's dental care. I did a little research, and the WDA has, for a long time, kind of lobbied the state legislators to increase funding. I haven't really gotten anywhere. It came a little bit as a shock to me that there's still a problem here. I guess I thought the Kenosha Community Health Clinic kind of could handle that. What I'd like to do before we pass a resolution is I guess gather some documentation or data on the lack of access to care. I know a few people here kind of mentioned that to me. I'm not exactly sure how we could go about that, if it would be just particular people's stories or if there are some statistics on waiting times, things like that. I kind of think, you know, since the WDA and certainly area dentists have kind of requested increased funding, that hasn't really gotten anywhere. I guess it occurred to me that it might have a lot more weight coming from health departments. Mm-hmm. So I guess before I move forward with that, if there's some way to provide me with some kind of documentation or statistics or something on some stories on that there still is a problem.
Mm-hmm. And we can do that through the health center. We can capture the amount of medical assistance clients that they're seeing, and probably through the years incrementally how they've increased with the ability. We can also look at the length of time to get an appointment. We can probably also take a look at the difference between adult and pediatric, and also type of care, whether it's just initial visit care or whether it's restorative care.
Right.
So we might be able to break it out, at least that we would have, be able to analyze what they're seeing in comparison to the amount of MA clients in our community, with the unknown would be the number of clients that are being seen at other dental offices. And I'm not sure if there's a percent or what.
I'm not aware that any other medical assistants.
Well, then there you go.
And that's why you brought that up.
Yeah,
you know, you asked about reimbursement, and I explained that no, not anymore. That typical overhead in a dental office is 70%, and medical assistance reimbursement rates are below 50. You can't do it.
And if you say you'll take one, you have to take them all.
Well, yeah. So you
can't just say I'll take
you just,
so many
you
a month. Or
you just can't do it. And I know that the Kenosha Community Health Clinic, because they're a federally funded clinic. There's other sources of financing there. I've kind of looked into this over the past and even spoken to the county executive about it, and he really couldn't give me any information because it's a federal clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I'm on the board.
Okay.
So
well, if you can, that would be wonderful if we could kind of get some answers. I mean, it would seem
an idea.
It would seem to me that, the primary responsibility should be, giving care to kids. Emergency and dental care to children first. So if they're failing there, I guess something needs to be done.
And whether they
exactly.
see kids immediately, and
right.
there's not an issue with accessing children,
right.
except for the parents bringing them and making the appointment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then. Of what's remainder, how many adults fill in or backfill.
Okay.
But to give you an idea of some of the information, I'll collect that and bring it to the next meeting.
Okay.
And then we can, from there, if you have any further questions, I can go back and mm-hmm. get some
okay.
more information.
All right, good.
And see where we're at so that you can see who you want to present information to or
mm-hmm.
the support for you trying to show that the Board of Health is supportive of this problem.
I wonder if the Children's Hospital Dental Clinic would also have some numbers for you, not specifically here, but because it's obviously an issue all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have to refer kids sometimes to Children's, because there isn't anyone locally. And I also wonder how many, you know, ER visits are there in, you know, in Kenosha related to abscesses?
Probably a lot.
I don't know if they keep statistics like that. I don't know if there are numbers we can access, but I think that would just add some credence to the fact that we're not getting preventive care.
Yeah.
And I know the health center has been diligently working on expansion, but it can only happen based on the funding that they've provided. And recently, federal funding, they were looking at shrinking the dollars that went to FQHCs. So, I mean, they've done a phenomenal job in regards to capacity building, but it's nowhere near the demand, the needs of our community.
Do you think most counties have the same issue? I mean, I know it might be good if we got something done to then notify other departments of health and say, this is what we did. Maybe if they bombarded the legislature.
Well, that was my thought was, you know, because again, the Wisconsin Dental Association and kind of dentists have been doing this for years and years and years. And, you know, they have a legislative day that I participated in the past where we went to Madison and went and knocked on and talked to the legislators and, you know, nothing changes. And it occurred to me that, well, wait a minute, maybe coming from a local board of health kind of saying, hey, look, here's what we are encouraging you to do because we still have this problem. Might hold a lot more weight than, you know.
And it looked like you guys just looking for more money or something.
Exactly. So.
Well, I believe it. What is it? Advocacy Day at the Capitol is coming up at the end of February, 26th. Or I know the health center is taking a contingent to the state capitol to plead their case or share the information that they have locally. But we definitely are blessed with having a health center here in Kenosha. We really are. We're very fortunate that we were able to secure this health center.
Well, if I might add, one that does dental.
Yes.
We have one in Racine, but they
don't do dental.
They don't do dental. And there's one dentist in the entire city that takes Medicaid insurance.
And that'll probably go away. Because we were down to one here, and she couldn't afford to do it.
Yeah, she's not. The one in Racine isn't happy.
Well, neither are her clients.
Yeah.
Population.
I mean, yeah.
She's getting everybody. She's the only one.
Right.
She's not going to be able to stay in business.
She's overloaded.
And yeah. She's and she
Dr. Swearingen had the same thing.
Right.
Do you have some way of being able to determine the population that you follow if there's a need in the kids for it? Just hit me when you were saying that because I also help cross cover walk in, and a lot of our dental stuff goes through our walk-in clinics. We see our share of adults, and sort of discouragingly, probably 20 or 30%. I give the pep talk about if you're one of the first, whatever, 10 in the morning, and they'll tell me that they don't get up that early or whatever, I don't get it. But I never see kids, and that just hit me when you brought that up. I don't know.
I'd say anecdotally, 35 to 40% of the kids that I see have visible caries.
But I'm saying, I don't know if, and I'm going to see if I get us data on the ER and what by diagnosis, but the kids probably put up with them without having to go to the ER. So I'm just trying to figure out a different way to capture those.
Well, there's two, if you recollect, there's two programs that are going on. One, the health center is doing the Seal a Smile program in the school system. They see they go to particular schools to see the population of, what is it, third to fifth grade. And so they're doing the dental varnishing and the sealants. And then our school nurses are continuing to do the dental varnishing piece with the younger kids. So that's Head Start through second grade. And so we probably can capture the numbers in regards to the number of caries that they visibly can see when they're doing the open mouth and adding the varnish. Pardon?
How many of the schools do they go to, or all of them?
All of the schools that the school nurses are in, they
in
set up.
In the city.
In the city.
Who runs the Seal a Smile program?
Pardon?
Who runs the Seal a Smile?
We originally initiated that program, took those initial funds, and then the health center had greater capacity by having hygienists and physicians, and so they were able to build a more comprehensive program, and they continue, we gave the program to them, they accessed the dollars, and so they're doing a program in set number of schools. But I think they're finding it's very expensive to choose.
Well, you know, and
because it's a world
certainly it's somewhat beneficial, but you know, that's really just a Band-Aid.
Right.
It's not really, you know, and to try to determine by looking how many cavities somebody has, you can't. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's just
service. You know, and I guess that's kind of the issue, is what's the most cost-effective way to provide this treatment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of been the WDA's position, and kind of what I feel is if you paid the local dentist a reasonable fee, they gladly open their doors and you know, you wouldn't have an access to care problem. So, you know, and it might even be in the long run more cost-effective.
Right.
So.
Well, when you look at restorative care, you know, in the number of years that there was the lack of access and now doing the restorative and the cost impact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, and we're just reaching, you know, going through the surface of that right now.
Seems to me, wouldn't a navigator solution work with dental as a period?
I think eventually it'll come to that once the state understands the local need for something to be done. And that's the way we were able to move even our OB problem through the system to get us local help. So I think this is a really good start, where you have a concerned group of people unified in one voice saying, we want help in this community. Mm-hmm. We're willing to do what we have to do, but you've got to give us some way to do that, some avenue. So this is excellent conversation.
Quinn likes a good fight. I'm all of
Any other comments?
I'm also on the mental health AODA committee, and I would just like to bring everybody's attention that the governor's proposed budget has finally got an increase, a big increase, for mental health services. And they want to create these drop-in centers. And Kenosha County has had that mental health drop-in center for a couple years now. And they did send staff down here and toured our facility like a couple of months ago. And I think they're using our model here in Kenosha County, that where we have this drop-in center. And that's saving the county hundreds of thousands of dollars instead of them going to hospitalization, where they can drop in and stay there and get some intermediate care there. And so hopefully that we can access some of that money in out of the budget. And we sorely could use a brand-new drop-in center or a better one. It's not very user-friendly or accessible to people with disabilities. So I think that's it's the first nice email I've sent to this governor so far. So, congratulate him on the mental health funding. If it sticks, I'm sure it will. But, yeah. I just wanted to highlight that a little bit. That could be good news for community health here. Yeah. I know it's the other division, but I know you work with
it. We work together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Motion to adjourn.
Second. Yes, I got you.